from Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
This is a bipartisan victory for the people of Illinois.
There's no victory in a public policy that will not work. No victory in a bill that will get tied up in court. No victory in harming the lives of teachers and firefighters and nurses.
Members came to feel that this was really it, and this was the moment in time when they could step up and on behalf of the fiscal future of the state of Illinois.
This bill ensures that the state will have to tax or borrow in the future to pay pensions and then cross our fingers and wish upon a star for solid investment returns.
Yes, we need a financial solution as the first step of rectifying our financial condition. And we have to do that reluctantly by asking people to take an alteration in the way their pension grows. We're not asking anyone to take a reduction of what they've earned, just a change in the way it grows.
If we've learned anything from the Nancy Pelosi and Obamacare situation in Washington, when you're passing things this complex, you ought to give it a little sunshine.
Something's got to be done. Something's got to be done. We can't go on dedicating so much of our resources to this one sector of pensions. This is not a one-sided bill. There will be changes here, much-needed changes. But this bill is a well-thought-out, well-balanced bill.
And those are some of the voices and sounds from the Illinois State Capitol this week as the legislature on Tuesday approved changes to the state's pension system. Then on Thursday, the governor signed the measure into law. So we'll talk pensions, the law, the court challenge, and all of the politics surrounding it today on State Week in Review. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS Illinois Public Radio, and our guest Doug Finke with Gatehouse Media. Gatehouse includes papers in Springfield, Peoria, and Macomb, among others. Doug, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
Well, this was one of those weeks, pension legislation. We'll try to unpack some of that pension legislation. And it seems like we wait now for the lawsuit to be filed. The law takes effect in June. But we'll go to the State House and with Doug and Amanda first and just kind of get initial overview of the measure and the swirl and the speed of which it all occurred over the last couple of weeks.
Well, yeah,
if there was speed, I mean, it did drag on for years and months. But.
Well, and you make a good point, because the leaders came to an agreement on this a week ago Wednesday, and it was passed the following Tuesday. And there were people who said, well, we didn't have time to look at this. It was too much of a hurry-up process. But the fact is the bulk of the components in this bill have been on the table for months and months. And you should have been able to formulate some kind of position on those before the vote on Tuesday. If you are against curtailing the cost of living adjustments for retirees, that was a big part of this bill that's been out there since forever. So most of this stuff was not a surprise.
You know, I'm gonna before we kind of I know we need to give an overview still, but I will say that it's on one hand, yes, this has been around for years. You should formulate. Everybody should know where they stand and know the issue of pensions. That said, coming out of the conference committee, for example, they said, hey, we can't meet Governor Pat Quinn's deadline because we're waiting for numbers to come back from the systems. We can't make any decision. We've heard time and time again about how, hey, you can't rush this. You need to make sure that the numbers are correct. Every little change that you make has a further change down the line. And we saw all of that ignored. So, I do think that as reporters who say, hey, look, they pass a budget in the blink of an eye, they pass major legislation all the time in the blink of an eye. Yes, broadly, everybody should have had a comprehensive view of the pension issue. But when, yeah, I do think that there's also a some fairness that we need to give, maybe not the legislators, you know, I'm sorry, it's a vote. That's how things work in Illinois. That is, however, the sort of stuff of how things work in Illinois in terms of getting measures passed through in this very quick manner that I think gives people a lot of pause when they're looking at their government and saying, hey, that's not fair. How have you been doing this? Clearly, yes, unions had weighed in for years, state employees. It wasn't like this was done under the shroud of secrecy that you've seen some other things in state government occur.
It was so just done under
the usual shroud of secrecy. It was still rushed. Yeah, it was. There wasn't time to look over the details. But moving on to maybe some of those details.
Can I ask you guys downtown a question? One of the reasons why there was what appeared to be a holdup, and you've mentioned it already, Amanda, is that the people on the conference committee, leaders, wanted to have all the proposals scored in the sense of saying, if we do this, what will the impact be down the line? Were the details of that scoring made available to lawmakers so they could see specifically, when we change this little piece, here's the impact on the teachers, here's the impact on university employees, here's the impact on legislators? Was that detail made available to individual legislators, or did they just have to take the word of their leaders that, yes, this will save $160 billion?
Well, to a degree, I think they had to take the word of their leaders. I'm not privy to everything that legislators are privy to, obviously. And we were given some basics. For example, the teachers' retirement system had the firm that they had hired, the kind of consultants to look over this, their actuaries. But their actuaries said in their information that they did not agree with it having used last year's numbers, the 2012 numbers, instead. And they disagreed with that. And evidently the reason for that was because it would allow a more accurate comparison to previous proposals, such as Senate Bills 2404 and Senate Bills 1, the Cullerton / Madigan versions. One of the Cullerton version, of course, had been negotiated with unions and was therefore kinder to employees. And then the Madigan version, which many argue was many say is closely aligned to what eventually passed, but was also harsher. Regardless, so they got some numbers, but no, from the time that it was became an agreement about a week and a half ago now, there isn't time for actuaries to do that sort of detail. So I think that there are still some questions about, will this actually save $160 billion or not? And that was one of the problems. Nonetheless, to give both sides of that, I think for many legislators, and this is what Doug was getting to initially, this got to the point where something was going to pass. This was clearly going to be the one with momentum that had the biggest chances of passing. So when you're talking in the billions of dollars, at what point do you quibble over those things? And how important is it to get those numbers? Was that a line that had been an excuse for all too long in the past, perhaps?
Well, going through a few of the items, and we can elaborate on some of these, but one of the things that changes is those who are retired or will be retiring, rather than see just an automatic 3% pay increase, that'll be tied to the cost of living and could vary from year to year. Anybody over the age of 46 could still retire on the normal schedule they want. Those who are younger than that, and it's graduated, but face working a little bit longer until retirement. It'll eventually, over time, if you're under 31, you'll have to work about 5 years longer. There will be some limitations on what the earnings will be on a pension. Only a portion of the pension will be eligible for the cost of living adjustment. Those are some of the broad things. Employees would pay less. You guys can share in some other highlights that you think need to be mentioned here.
Just a small quibble with you, Bill.
Yeah.
The change on the so-called cost of living adjustments, it's a more limited application of that, and it's not tied to the rate of inflation.
Okay.
That's one of the points that Madigan made when this bill was being discussed, that current 3% automatic increase has nothing to do with inflation, even though it's called a cost of living adjustment. What happens now is there's a formula established, which, as Madigan says, puts up a magic number. And if your current pension benefit is below that, you still get the 3% increase on that amount of money. If your pension is above that amount, you'll still get the 3% increase up to that magic number. Above that, you don't.
Okay, so say, for example, somebody that was getting $28,000 a year in pension benefits would still likely see a 3% cost of living adjustment?
It depends on how long a person's worked and whether they're covered by Social Security or not. And the example that they've always used was somebody who not covered by Social Security and worked X number of years for the state and is getting a $30,000 pension right now. If that's their magic number based on their length of service and this formula, if they're below that with their pension benefits, they get the increase, and if the amount above that, they do not get the increase.
I appreciate the clarification, though. I do appreciate the clarification.
Yeah, and we always say cost of living, but in fact, that's technically not what it is, right? I mean, members of some retirement systems actually contribute 1% of their paychecks toward this AAI, which I believe is the more proper term, and it's an annual annuity increase. And it's not at all related to the consumer price index or any other measure of inflation.
Well, but I mean, so broadly what they're going to do, and you're right, that again, that's a point that Madigan tried to make. He said, you know, we hear about cost of living, but a 3% compounded annual cost of living increase is not that, he said, which is why it needs to be changed. That's what critics of the pensions have long said contributed to Illinois' major unfunded liability, the worst in the nation, is because that, as Madigan termed it very pointedly in the conference committee where they went over all of these changes initially on Tuesday morning, he said benefits are too rich. I was sitting in the front press row with a long group of union leaders behind me who you could hear, literally hear, go and kind of growl when Madigan said that, because of course they say, no, we don't think that this problem is because benefits are too rich. It's because the state for so long did not pay its share. Nonetheless, that is really kind of the most, for many people, major change, is taking away that compounded annual COLA. As Doug was saying, it's more complicated than that. And what the backers of the plan say they were trying to do by kind of making it complicated, that they were aiming to protect the longest serving, lowest paid employees. So those are the people who will, to a point, keep that 3% compounded annual COLA. It changes for everybody else, and then it does factor into the equation the years of service and does tie somewhat into inflation there going into the consumer price index.
Now, the state in this, is it a guarantee that the state will fund pensions in the future? It seemed like there may have been some loopholes in there that would let the legislature get by without contributing to the pension system if it really needed to or wanted to.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that there are loopholes. I mean, there is a law on the books that's been on the books since 1995 requiring the state to make a calculated payment into the five retirement systems each year. And in the mid-2000s, the Democratic leadership and Rod Blagojevich decided we're just going to change the law and we're going to skip making more than $2 billion in payments. So whatever the law says, what one General Assembly passes, another General Assembly can change.
Right. And the part of that, they talked that in this bill there is a provision where the pension systems can go to court if the state doesn't make its required payment. The problem, according to the critics, is the state is fairly free to change the amount that they deem is the required payment. So if they want to lower that, they just do that, and then there's no real basis for a court challenge.
I will add that the guarantee, that's an issue that maybe we can get into, because there really are some fascinating politics of it, that, of course, this matters for so many people. It's their livelihoods. It's their retirement savings. But the politics are the other end of it that for legislators and politicians, at least, are, I think, in many ways the most meaningful to them, even though many of the legislators are getting pensions themselves. This whole guarantee question really became something that the one of the Republican candidates for governor, the wealthy, rich Bruce Rauner, had tried to make a lot of issue about, and saying that he didn't want there to be a guarantee because that would tie the system down too much. That would tie the state. Who knows what's going to happen in the future? So that's a criticism that you saw on the other end of it. There are those who say it's too weak. There are those who say it's too strong. That's similar to the rest of the pension measure broadly, and which is why you have some of the people saying, hey, it's our Goldilocks plan, because it does come down in the middle. I will just add that this whole question of a guarantee, one could say, okay, sure, making this guarantee, 95 ramp, what have you. Illinois has pretty much as solid of guarantees you can get, and that is, of course, the guarantee in the state constitution, where there's a line that pretty darn directly says that that pension benefits shall not be diminished nor impaired. So there is also that. Of course, that same constitution also calls it a contractual agreement, which is where you're going to see the state trying to weigh in and say, hey, this is a contract and we're giving some consideration, as Bill mentioned, for example, that state employees will be contributing 1% less of their paychecks toward their retirement benefits.
You're listening to State Week in Review. More discussion about the pension legislation just ahead.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
Panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Venicky, and Gatehouse Media's Doug Finke. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Well, Amanda, you mentioned some of the politics around it. You mentioned the name Bruce Rauner. Gubernatorial politics, especially on the Republican side, well, both sides, because Governor Pat Quinn obviously wanted this passed for his reelection. But on the Republican side, Bruce Rauner has criticized it roundly. Kirk Dillard was one of those, and Bill Brady, another Republican candidate, were people who had to vote on the matter. Dillard voted against it. Bill Brady voted in favor of the reform. You want to add your thoughts and perceptions related to the governor's race and how this all played out?
That's a show in itself, let me
yes,
tell
it
you.
Is. Yes, it is.
Governor Pat Quinn, as you said, let's get that out of the way. He, of course, Democrats have long been allied with unions, and so it was striking to see how many Democrats, including the governor himself, who has asked me in part to thank for him becoming governor in his last re-election in 2010. And of course, he has long been saying that he wants pension reform. He wants pension reform. So this really was a major win for Pat Quinn in that regard. It remains to be seen, depending, of course, on who his Republican candidate will be, what that will mean for him in a general election, particularly if he loses that support, as one would expect he will from AFSCME. Then again, where else is AFSCME going to go? Get to that in a second on the Republican side of things. I will add that there is an interesting separation with labor, because whereas the labor unions representing teachers and state employees are very much against this, you have long seen that Quinn has support from more of the trades unions. And they, of course, are thrilled to have Illinois' finances be kind of cleaned up some in anything that could benefit them in terms of more projects and jobs on that side. as I said, getting to the Republican point of view, there is some rumor that there is a sort of shadow primary going on for union support between Senator Dillard, whom, as you mentioned, voted against the measure, even though he had previously voted for Senate Bill 1. That's the Madigan version that was even harsher. And Dillard trying to say that he hadn't had enough time to review it and that he thought that it was unconstitutional. And he has tried to say that that squares with his previous vote because he said that time it was clear that it wasn't going to happen for real. And so that was why he voted. I'm not sure that that has held up. It's very much seen that he is just playing politics with that. And again, a question, maybe he's trying to get some of those union dollars from AFSCME, perhaps Treasurer Dan Rutherford, who did not have to vote, but had also long said that he wanted a pension measure passed, but then came out against this, may also be striving for those dollars. It'd be questionable to see how that would hold up in a Republican primary where that may not be, oh, great, we want a candidate that has union support. But in order to play against Bruce Rauner, again, he's the mega millionaire who's put enough tons of his own money as well as that of his other very uber rich friends who are separated from the rest of the business community. In the business community, you know, Chamber of Commerce, small business associations, manufacturers, all were backing this pension measure. But you saw Rauner and his, again, just uber wealthy friends, that's really the best way to describe this group of characters, saying, coming out against it. That has largely been seen as playing politics. Again, that Rauner wants this to remain an issue that he can beat his other Republicans over because they've all had careers in state government as well as Pat Quinn, and place the blame. This takes a major election issue off the table for him. And then it was, it's for sure that Rauner has been, was evidently making calls to legislators and trying to sway them to stay out of it and to vote no, trying to say, Republicans, hey, if you vote no, maybe you can get some of this money later on down the line. So setting up a really interesting dynamic there. House Speaker Mike Madigan saying that he thought Rauner had, you know, made a big mistake, and look who lost, look who won. But so that's really been a fascinating dynamic to watch with this.
Well, also with Kirk Dillard, I think that by voting no, he leaves the door open for that union support, but he can't really get attacked by Rauner on this issue. So that would also shore up that end, I would think, as well.
Well, I mean, Dillard, I think it's interesting to point out that not only did he vote for a very similar plan to this last spring, he also cast a vote against the union-negotiated plan that came up in the Senate. And he may be courting the union votes, but I would have to think they might be wondering which version of Dillard they're going to end up with.
Something that came to mind to me on this was House Speaker Michael Madigan. There was a couple of months ago when he was facing some controversies and his daughter decided not to run for governor. There were people in the chattering class, meaning people on talk shows like this, were sometimes asking, is the speaker not up to his game or something like that? And it seems like the speaker has made it clear that he was instrumental in this role of getting this measure through and made sure credit was given to him as well for rounding up the votes for same-sex marriage. And I don't think many people would be surprised that the speaker is still holding power. But I did find it interesting that he's certainly letting it be known that he feels he's on his game right now.
Well, I think he's still the best vote counter and the shrewdest strategist under the State House dome. And I think it's pretty safe to say that had Madigan not flexed his muscle, this pension plan would not have passed. By the same token, Senate President John Cullerton had to put additional Democratic votes on when Republicans peeled off in the Senate. And so both Democratic leaders committed themselves to providing the necessary votes, and I suspect that had there been more Republican defections, either because they were listening to Rauner or for some other reason, there were probably extra Democratic votes in the fold in case they needed to trot them out to make the bills pass.
Now we have – go ahead, Amanda.
I was just going to say, to get to those remarks, it was remarkable just to hear the speaker did pat himself on the back, and in the press release after the governor signed this, again, taking credit for it in a way that was separate than he has in the past, really saying, I'm the one responsible for all of this. And there's a question as to why. What's going on there? Is it to reestablish after those questions? Is it perhaps to send a signal, some have thought, to the Illinois State Supreme Court, where Madigan did have a it is largely seen as getting some of those individuals appointed to the state's highest court if they're asked to make a ruling, actually. Hey, this is where I stand
on it.
Maybe.
I think would be
he helped fund their campaigns as
exactly.
head of the Democrats.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah,
yes,
but I look at that elected. I look at that as being just a totally bogus argument that really doesn't understand the way the court works. If you're elected a justice of the Illinois Supreme Court, when you're there for all intents and purposes for life, or until you decide you want to step down. You have to stand for retention every 10 years, and I don't believe a Supreme Court justice has ever not been retained under the system that actually went into effect even before the Constitution, the new Constitution of 1970. So this notion that Madigan's got these justices in his pocket, I just don't buy that.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean,
it's not like a state lawmaker who has to stand for re-election every 2 years against a flesh and blood opponent, or in the case of senators, most often every 4 years. Justices run against their record. And it would be extraordinarily difficult to try and unseat a justice up for retention based on the fact that the justice read the Constitution literally in the case of this particular legislation.
We've clearly seen more controversy going to the courts and to how justices are elected in Illinois. And if that is the best system, again, that's, I think, an entire separate discussion that we could get into. Is appointing judges the way to go when you've looked at the number of campaign dollars that have increasingly been going into some of these campaigns for court? Is that showing that politics are finding their way into that system? Nonetheless, that is something that people have raised, and I do think that it's clear that in part the court is a political animal, in that it needs to, members of that that are on the state Supreme Court in cases were either originally appointed or got dollars in order to win that. So that's a separate discussion. Point being, Madigan clearly patting himself on the back, and that's one of the theories as to why he was did so openly. And then on the other side of things, you've seen, I think, Senate President John Cullerton, who, Charlie, as you mentioned, clearly did get the votes, clearly worked his caucus in order to get it passed, even though it's abundantly clear he doesn't like it.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this edition of State Week. More discussion probably coming next week. Thanks to Doug Finke of Gatehouse Media for joining us. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org, or if using a desktop or laptop, find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.